Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our series on chronic disease and cancer. Unfortunately, the rates are rising. Since I lost my dad to small cell prostate cancer in early January, we lost two of his friends to breast cancer. Another four of his friends are fighting cancer. My dad was only 74, and his friends are all younger. We are losing too many people, and that is why we are doing so many of these shows. Today's guest, gastroenterologist Dr. Alan Desmond, says it doesn't have to be this way. We can transform our health and revolutionize our quality of life by eating more plants. Now, eating more plants, as so many of the doctors on our show have said, does not guarantee you will not get cancer or chronic disease, but it drastically lowers your risk. Dr. Desmond asks, when food is fast becoming the leading cause of poor health, disability, healthy years lost, and a leading driver of chronic gut health problems, why are we doctors not talking about it all the time? Well, one major problem is that 95% of people in the United States are not eating enough fiber. Fiber's health benefits have been recorded by over 100 years of research, linking fiber to a reduced incidence of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and several cancers, including colorectal, breast, and prostate. Increased fiber intake also lowers your risk of death. Dr. Desmond says to avoid fiber deficiency, you should aim for 3 servings of vegetables, 3 servings of fruit, and 3 servings of whole grains every day. And we'll talk about that on today's show. Dr. Alan Desmond is a gut health doctor specializing in the role diet plays in the prevention and treatment of digestive diseases. He's certified in gastroenterology and general internal medicine. Dr. Desmond is author of The Plant-Based Diet Revolution, 28 Days to a Healthier You. He's also host of the Eat This podcast. We should also mention that Dr. Desmond worked on a COVID unit during the first and second waves of that devastating disease. The lockdowns began 5 years ago this month. Wow, that's amazing to think about. Hi, Dr. Desmond. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Rose, thank you for inviting me and thank you so much to KALW and Your Call for putting a spotlight on gut health. It's so important.
Well, it is so important, Dr. Desmond, and you do such incredible work. The question that you asked on your Instagram page, when food is fast becoming the leading cause of so many diseases, why are we doctors not talking about this all the time? That was in the year 2022. But I put that in the introduction because so many of the doctors we've had on over the past month have asked the same question. Has it gotten any better since then?
I think it is improving. We're certainly seeing in medical schools around the world, in the UK, where I live and work, in Ireland, where I'm from, and also in the United States, that more and more medical schools are putting nutrition and food, more especially, on the medical curriculum. So that's really, really encouraging. And as somebody who travels to a lot of medical conferences where we focus on diet and lifestyle medicine, it's so encouraging to me every single time that I see more and more young doctors, young nurses, dietitians, and other allied health professionals who are early in their career turning up at these conferences to learn more about how to motivate, inspire, and help their patients to make healthier food choices every single day because it is so important. So I think it has improved. I mean, since I was in medical school, in the 1990s and very early 2000s, I think it's changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. And also, Rose, we are seeing more and more studies in the medical literature specifically examining, focusing on, and highlighting the health benefits of a healthier, more plant-based approach to food. And, you know, doctors love evidence. We love studies. There was a quote by my friend, Dr. Kim Williams, from almost 10 years ago now, where Dr. Williams, who at the time was the most senior cardiologist in the United States, the time rose, he made this statement. He said, there are two kinds of cardiologists, vegans and those who haven't read the data. And I guess what he was alluding to was that when we look at the evidence on diet and coronary vascular disease prevention, healthy plant-based diets win out every time. And I think what other doctors and other specialties are noticing is that it is true for so many other diseases, particularly in my field, in gastroenterology. You know, you mentioned in the introduction that ancient statement from Hippocrates, the father of Western medicine from 2,500 years ago. Hippocrates said all disease begins in the gut. And what we're realizing in the 21st century is that there's so much truth in that ancient wisdom. But of course, I like to put a healthier spin on that, or maybe a more positive spin. With apologies to Hippocrates, I like to remind my patients that all health begins in the gut. Because if we can get you building gut-healthy practices into your diet and lifestyle every day, your quality of life can improve dramatically and truly revolutionize.
Let's talk about how you got hooked on gastroenterology. In past interviews, you tell a story about how back in the early 2000s, so many patients asked you, what about food? What should I be eating? What should I avoid? And at that point, you wanted evidence-based answers to those questions. And you tell a story about how when you were a junior doctor taking care of patients, a young man had severe inflammatory bowel disease. He was really sick. He felt so awful. And he said, what should I eat? And at the time, his doctor said, well, it doesn't really matter. Eat whatever you like. And the doctor actually asked his mom, does he like McDonald's? Can you tell us about that and how that affected you?
Of course. At that point, Rose, I was one of the most junior doctors on the ward. I think that happened in about 2004. And I remember really well standing at the bedside. And this young man had a condition called Crohn's disease, a condition which many of your listeners may be familiar with, because Crohn's disease and its related condition, ulcerative colitis, which are both forms of inflammatory bowel disease, affect 2.3 million Americans. About 1% of the U.S. population, by some estimates, are living with these chronic inflammatory bowel diseases of their digestive tract. These have a very substantial negative impact on one's quality of life. In fact, we know that the majority of patients with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis would not describe themselves as having a good quality of life because they're living with daily symptoms, abdominal cramps, diarrhea, inability to go and enjoy food with their friends and their families, which is so important. They're often on long-term medications, which are great. The medications can be super helpful. They may need surgery. In fact, about 40% of patients with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis will end up having major abdominal surgery. So these are very significant conditions. We know that the onset of these conditions is multifactorial. Genetics, environmental exposures, whether or not you required antibiotics when you were a kid, whether or not you were breastfed as a child, those all have a real impact on your risk of developing these conditions. We also know two things. We know that a healthy plant-forward diet and a healthy lifestyle can reduce your risk of developing both of these conditions by maybe 40 to 60%.
Wow.
And we also know that if you have somebody, particularly with Crohn's disease, and if they are eating a standard American diet at the time of diagnosis, that if we can help you and support you to shift your dietary pattern to a healthy, home-cooked, unprocessed, plant-predominant dietary pattern, what we would describe as the typical historical Mediterranean diet, the healthy Mediterranean diet, that we can get maybe two-thirds of people into remission with diet alone. So what I understand now, having been a gastroenterologist for 13 years and having studied gastroenterology and been on the gastroenterology ward for maybe half a decade before that, is that when my boss told that young man and his mom that food, it didn't matter what he eated, or excuse me, what he would eat, that he just needed calories, it was a missed opportunity. And it's true. My boss on that day said to that young man, do you like McDonald's? Because as is often the case then, and even now, often on hospital wards, the focus is on calories, 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 not quality, quality, quality. And certainly in my own practice for years now, I have answered that question in a completely different way. Does food matter? Yes, it does. What should I eat? Well, I want my patients to know that if we can support them in transitioning to a healthy, plant-forward, plant-based approach to food, it could potentially have huge impacts on their future gut health and their prospects and their prognosis. If we look beyond it, and if we look beyond inflammatory bowel disease, okay, so it's important to note that eating food is like a normal human process. Everybody eats, chews, burps, farts, poops. These are healthy processes. To be able to eat and digest your food comfortably and have a well-functioning digestive system should be regarded as normal, right? Normal for humans. But sadly, if we look at the US and the UK and other countries where we eat our standard Western diet, what used to be called the standard American diet. So this is a high meat, high dairy, high fat, high processed food, high junk food diet, where we may be getting up to 60% of our calories from junk food, where we have a fiber deficient, plant deficient approach to food. It shouldn't be surprising to us that conditions like diverticular disease, bowel cancer, gastroesophageal reflux disease, gallstones, fatty liver disease, and even inflammatory bowel disease that we've just been speaking about, these have almost become regarded as normal conditions, as in inevitable, that they just happen for no reason. But of course, our diet and lifestyle can be remarkably protective. And even when we develop these conditions, it's important to know that a healthy diet and lifestyle really, really, really improve our prognosis and our prospects.
We're at such an interesting time, I guess that's the word for it, because there's so much research out there. Here's just a few examples. The Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, high fiber diet linked with reduced breast cancer. Harvard Health Publishing, fiber linked to lower risk of chronic disease and early death. I mean, we can go on and on. At the same time, ultra processed foods now make up a significant portion of the U.S. diet, in some cases about 60%, according to studies. According to Vox, in recent decades, the average American has steadily increased their consumption of meat, milk, and eggs to a staggering 224 pounds of red meat and poultry, 280 eggs. So what are your thoughts about what is happening right now? I mean, the numbers are just devastating. 60% of Americans have at least one chronic disease. 40% have two chronic diseases. And then you know this very well as a gut doctor, cancer rates are rising, especially among young people when you're looking at colon cancer. So how are you thinking about where we are right now?
Well, I can feel a little bit pessimistic sometimes, but I have to say the incredible transformations I see in my patients all the time really give me hope. And the fact that you're talking about this on your radio station right now give me hope. I mean, the fact of the current design of our diet, the statistics you were describing on egg consumption, meat consumption, ultra-processed food consumption, those increasing trends have nothing to do with keeping us healthy. You know that very well. They're driven by market forces, by profit, by the bottom line. We want these foods, the hot dogs, the bacon, the red meat, etc. Those are very heavily subsidized, both in the US and Europe, in order to make them profitable for the people who produce them. And I've got nothing individually against the people who produce these foods. I've got nothing to say to criticize the people who eat them, because those foods are presented to us as cheap and delicious. And it is the food culture that we are presented, which has everything to do with economic forces and nothing to do with health. But it's important to know that on an individual basis, we can push right back against those trends and against those forces three times a day when we'd sit down and decide what we are going to eat, what we are going to feed our family. It's really interesting. You mentioned cancer, which is so important. And thank you for mentioning your dad's cancer journey, his friends' cancer journeys in the introduction to this piece. Unfortunately, bowel cancer, specifically colon cancer, is becoming more common in many ways due to our deteriorating dietary intakes and our deteriorating health overall. In the US right now, bowel cancer is the third most common cancer diagnosed in men and women. About 1 in 23 men and 1 in 25 women will develop bowel cancer every single year in the US. But I got to tell you, healthy plant-based diets, which incorporate fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, leafy greens, and all of those good, healthy plant-based options, while minimizing junk foods and minimizing the intake, especially of red meat, like beef, and processed meats, like bacon, substantially reduce the risk of colon cancer. I'm sure you'll be aware of the Seventh-day Adventists in Loma Linda, California. They've been featured in Dan Buettner's work. They were featured heavily in the Blue Zones documentary on Netflix. So these are individuals who, for religious reasons, have a very healthy diet and lifestyle. They also tend to eat very little meat, if any meat, and focus on eating more healthy plant-based options. Their meat consumption is much lower than the US average, and they are 30% less likely to get colon cancer than the US average. A few years ago, back in 2022, there was a much bigger study beyond the Seventh-day Adventists, what we call one of these systemic meta-analyses, where researchers pulled together 10 years of follow-up data on more than 3 million adults living in North America, Europe, and Japan. And they looked at the food they ate, particularly looking at individuals who had a plant-based diet. And when I say plant-based, that could be vegan, vegetarian, or an omnivorous diet that involves very little meat, so the so-called flexitarian dietary pattern. So if we look at those and consider all of those plant-based diets, diets that minimize or exclude animal products, while focusing on fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, and soybeans, and all those good foods, we can see that not only do plant-based diets reduce the risk of developing colorectal cancer by about half, they also reduce the risk of pancreatic cancer, stomach cancer, liver cancer. And in fact, the researchers who published those papers said the implication of our findings is a call for action to pay special attention to plant-based diets to reduce risk of digestive cancers. Really, really powerful studies. And we see studies like this coming out time and time again. The World Cancer Research Fund is a charitable group that has been researching what we can do to reduce our risk of cancer through diet and lifestyle for decades. They are the world experts on it. And if any of your listeners would like to go to wcorf.org, you can read all about their incredible research. Now, in terms of dietary intakes, the World Cancer Research Fund recommend, when it comes to food, that it is really important. Their WCRF anti-cancer diet is the opposite of the standard American diet. They advise that we should make whole grains, vegetables, fruits, pulses, legumes, beans, and lentils a major part of our usual daily diet, that we should avoid red meat and eat little, if any, processed meat. And the data tells us that it works. If you eat like that, if you just eat like that, a big study published a few years ago following about 300,000 participants across Europe and the US, and again, following them for up to 14 years, they found that the people who ate like I just described were up to 80% less likely to get bowel cancer and had a 32% reduced total risk of cancer, 32% reduced risk of prostate cancer, and in their lifetime were likely to enjoy an additional 7 years of their life without any cancer at all. So powerful, powerful studies and powerful data. And as doctors, we need to be talking to our patients about eating more plants and eating less meat, for sure.
Today, we are spending the hour with Dr. Alan Desmond, a gut health specialist. He's certified in gastroenterology and general internal medicine. He's the author of The Plant-Based Diet Revolution, 28 Days to a Healthier You. He also hosts the Eat This podcast. If you have any questions about gut health and diet, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Also, it is so important to note that 95% of people in the United States are not eating enough fiber. Fiber is linked with a lower risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, so many cancers, including colorectal, breast, and prostate. So if you have any questions also about fiber, we'd love to hear from you. You can email yourcall@kalw.org or give us a call, 866-798-8255. So let's talk about some general concepts here. You talk a lot about gut health. What exactly is gut health?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay, so if we consider the human body, okay, so our GI tract, our gut, our mouth, our esophagus, our stomach, our small intestine is a remarkable machine. I guess its main function is to take the food that we eat, turn it into the building blocks that help to build and repair healthy body. Of course, it does way more than just ingest and digest our food. It's also responsible beyond the absorption of nutrients for important endocrine and exocrine functions, important functions regarding immunity. So it's no surprise that when our gut health is failing us, we can become really unwell, subject to increased risks of other conditions like chronic diseases, heart disease, and really overall immunity can reduce as well. It's no surprise that if you come to any hospital, like the hospital I work at, you will soon realize, as I did when I first entered a gastroenterology ward, that patients with severe GI problems are some of the sickest patients in the hospital because they need so much support from doctors, dietitians, and other allied health professionals. So gut health is about the ability to ingest and digest your food comfortably and efficiently for optimal human health.
So talk about what happens when we eat. What happens when we eat fruits and vegetables versus and nuts and seeds and beans versus ultra processed foods and processed meats?
Oh, okay. Well, you know, a good way to conceptualize this might be to talk about the effects that those two different dietary patterns have on the gut microbiome, which we haven't mentioned yet, Rose, but is a really important component here. So I'm sure many of your listeners will have heard of the gut microbiome. So these are trillions of bacteria, viruses, yeasts, and archaea that live mostly in our large intestine, in our gut. The microbiome contains as many cells and 150 times more genetic material than the rest of our human body. We are more bug than gut, thanks to our human gut microbiome. Now, the gut microbiome begins to form the moment we are born, with that first breath of fresh air, that first human touch, very first sip of breast milk. Our body begins to be populated by microbes, bacteria, viruses, yeasts, and archaea. The presence of those microbes in our gut are absolutely crucial to the development of a healthy GI tract and a healthy immune system when we are growing babies. But it remains really, really important. In fact, the human gut microbiome has been described as a control center for human biology. It remains really important during our adult life, and it responds in a very major way the food that we eat. In fact, the three most important determinants of a healthy gut microbiome are food. Because our gut microbiome is constantly making what we call postbiotics. These are biologically active components produced by our gut microbes, which have a massive impact on our blood sugar control, our appetite, our levels of chronic inflammation, and our health. So every time you eat a meal, you can ask yourself, Rose, what sort of gut microbiome am I building today? If you have a meal, which might be described as the kind of standard American, standard Western meal, let's say a dish that is made up of red meat, processed meat, animal fat, maybe some added cream and cheese, so a high-fat, low-fiber meal, your digestive system is incredible. Your small bowel will get to work, and it will get all the helpful nutrition it can get out of that meal. The proteins, the fats, the carbohydrates, the nutrients your body needs will be absorbed. Whatever remains, the leftovers, are delivered to your large bowel, your colon. And now those substances become food for your gut microbiome. And if you eat a meal like I just described, what your gut microbiome receives is a lot of bile, because you're having to digest all of that fat. Your body makes a lot of bile. Residual animal protein, because you've just eaten a meal that is really high in animal protein. A meal that has delivered very few anti-inflammatory polyphenols, very few antioxidants, and almost no dietary fiber, because there was no fruits or vegetables or whole grains in that meal. So that mix of nutrients for your gut microbiome specifically feeds bacteria in your gut microbiome that generate harmful postbiotic substances like carcinogenic secondary bile acids, hydrogen sulfide gas, which increases inflammation. This has a direct effect on your health, pro-inflammatory and pro-carcinogenic effects. In short, you're building a gut microbial environment that is conducive to chronic inflammation and colorectal cancer. But then the next day, because you've just listened to this radio program, you decide to take a different approach to lunch. So you have some whole grain rice and some tofu and fruits and vegetables, and you've eaten a healthy plant-based meal. Well, of course, your digestive system gets to work and absorbs all protein and carbohydrates and healthy fats that it needs. Of course, with that meal, your body's getting the benefits of all the antioxidants and healthy compounds we get within that really healthy meal. The residual, what's left over, is now delivered to your large bowel to become food for your gut microbiome. But because you've eaten a different kind of meal, you're getting a completely different residual delivered to your gut microbiome. There's hardly any bile in there because it was a naturally low-fat meal. There isn't any animal protein, but guess what? There's residual fiber and polyphenols from all of those healthy foods you've just had. Those substances feed a completely different family of bacteria in your gut microbiome. Bacteria that love fiber, saccharolytic bacteria that produce beneficial short-chain fatty acids, which enter your bloodstream, help to control your blood sugars, help to control chronic inflammation, actually help to maintain your neurological health. Those short-chain fatty acids provide 70% of the energy requirements for the cells that line your large bowel, help to keep your colon healthy, help to reduce your risk of colon cancer. These healthy postbiotics that are produced by the gut microbiome that you've just fed a delicious meal to help to promote healthy cell metabolism, help to reduce inflammation and have anti-cancer effects. So in short, you are now building a gut microbiome that is not conducive to chronic inflammation or colorectal cancer. And it's no surprise that when we look at the big data on individuals who eat a healthy plant-based diet, we could see people who eat healthy plant-based meals long-term have a demonstrably healthier gut microbiome, which helps in part to explain why people who eat plant-based diets are substantially less likely to develop many diseases, including heart disease, as we mentioned earlier, but also substantially less likely to develop conditions like diverticular disease. So diverticular disease probably affects about 50% of UK adults. And U.S. adults is far less likely to occur than people who eat a plant-based diet. We also know that other conditions, including colon cancer, as I've discussed a few moments ago, but also gastroesophageal reflux disease, inflammatory bowel disease. These are all far less likely to occur when people eat a really healthy diet. And the gut microbiome explains a lot of that.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we have a number of questions that we'll get to. We'll also talk about how you can change the health of your microbiome in a very short amount of time. Today, we're joined by Dr. Alan Desmond, a gut health specialist certified in gastroenterology and general internal medicine. He's author of the book, The Plant-Based Diet Revolution, 28 Days to a Healthier You. He is also host of the podcast, The Eat This Podcast. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are continuing our series on chronic disease and cancer by talking about the importance of having a healthy gut. We're joined today by Dr. Alan Desmond, a gut health specialist, who is the author of The Plant-Based Diet Revolution, 28 Days to a Healthier You, and host of the Eat This podcast. So, Dr. Desmond, we have a lot of questions about fiber, a lot of basic questions. Can you please talk about why it is so important? Let's actually take that first, and then we'll talk about how much we actually need.
Of course. So fiber is really important. So we can think about fiber as something that comes from fruits and vegetables. So we only get fiber in our diet naturally if we eat fruits and vegetables and leafy greens and whole grains and your whole grain rice and your healthy high fiber breads. It is so important. From a digestive perspective, we used to think that dietary fiber was only important because it helps to prevent constipation. It helps things move along so we don't get bunged up. And yes, that is absolutely true. Dietary fiber helps to achieve that. But also having sufficient dietary fiber means that we are feeding the healthy bugs of our gut microbiome, which we mentioned earlier. So getting enough dietary fiber is also important for that. And the third thing that makes dietary fiber so important is when we look at how much dietary fiber someone is eating, it also tells us how many different plants they're eating. So as well as the fiber that you get from eating all those healthy foods, you get a lot of vitamin A, vitamin C, you get folate, you get the fiber, obviously, but you also get the antioxidants and the anti-inflammatory components that we get with all of those healthy foods. So if you want to measure one, if you're only allowed to measure one thing, regarding dietary intakes, if you're only allowed to look at one number for an individual, looking at their dietary fiber would be a good one to look at to determine whether or not their diet is healthy. But sadly, Rose, as you mentioned earlier, the vast majority of adults in the US and the UK right now are just not getting enough dietary fiber. And if you do want to know that you're getting enough dietary fiber, I can talk you through an easy way to figure that out if you'd like.
Yes, that would be great, because a lot of people are saying you want people to aim for 3 servings of veggies, fruits, and whole grains every day. And people are saying, well, what is a serving? What does that actually look like in practice?
Okay, let's talk through this because this is really important. So usually we recommend that people would eat a minimum of 30 grams of dietary fiber per day, a minimum of 30 grams of dietary fiber per day. In fact, the optimum is probably higher than that. In fact, the target you should maybe be going for is about 20 grams of dietary fiber for every 1,000 calories that you consume. So if you need 2,000 calories a day, you could maybe be aiming for 40 grams of fiber per day. But let me talk you through how to get to 30 grams of dietary fiber per day. It's so important. What you eat plays a big role in keeping your gut healthy, and a diet rich in fiber will help digestion, support regular bowel movements, help reduce bloating, keep your gut working well, and keep your gut microbiome healthy too. So you should aim to gradually build up to eating 3 servings of vegetables a day, 3 servings of fruit each day, and 3 servings of whole grains per day. Now, those foods will give you the dietary fiber and nutrients you need to keep your gut functioning at its best. But you're right. What does that actually look like? Okay, let's talk about vegetables. So a serving of vegetables is basically about a handful. So that could be a handful of baby carrots or cherry tomatoes or sugar snap peas, maybe a small bowl of mixed salad, maybe half a plate of cooked veggies like broccoli, peas, or sweet corn. So each one of those is one serving of veggies. Let's talk about fruit, the sweet treat that everybody loves, right? So fruit, one serving would be just one medium-sized apple or a banana or a pear, maybe a handful of berries or grapes, or a side bowl of mixed fruit salad. So each one of those is one serving. Then when it comes to whole grains, and I think these ones are so often neglected, are whole grains. So one serving of whole grains would be one slice of a nice wholemeal bread, maybe a small bowl of oats or a whole grain breakfast cereal like shredded wheat or Weetabix, or a portion of brown rice or wholemeal pasta or quinoa, which would again be a small bowl of brown rice or whole wheat pasta or quinoa. So just to recap, because it's really important to labor this point, if you were to get 3 servings of veggies, 3 servings of fruit, and 3 servings of whole grains, you need to be fiber aware every time you eat. I mean, for example, if you were going to get everything I just said into your day, then your breakfast might be a nice bowl of porridge with a handful of berries. Your lunch might be a whole meal bread sandwich with a salad on the side and a piece of fruit. Your dinner would include a serving of brown rice and a serving of vegetables. And then in between, you would maybe snack on vegetable sticks and some hummus, or maybe 1 or 2 pieces of fruit. Now, for a lot of people who eat the standard American diet, that sounds like an insane amount of fiber, right? That sounds like a lot of healthy food. But if you follow all of that advice, you're just reaching the minimum recommended of 30 grams of dietary fiber per day. And if you can build up to that number, as well as drinking enough water, staying hydrated, staying physically active and moving about, taking a little walk after each meal, you will find that your gut health improves dramatically. And you will be absolutely in a much healthier place in terms of your future prospects for gut health than the majority of Americans are right now.
Amy writes in, can you also talk about how protein figures into your dietary way of living healthy? Amy writes, as someone with a grandmother who died of colon cancer and 2 cousins who recently were treated for colon cancer, I am super grateful for this show. Thank you, Amy. This really affects all of us. And I appreciate your question about protein.
It's so important. And thank you, AB, for that question. And I'm so sorry for your family's experience. As I've mentioned, everybody knows somebody who has had or whose family have been affected by colon cancer or bowel cancer. About 1.9 million people are diagnosed with bowel cancer every year globally. And that's why it is so important to please, if you do have any symptoms that are on your mind, go and talk to your family physician. If you are offered the opportunity to take part in a bowel cancer screening program, please take part in a bowel cancer screening program. But it is true, as we mentioned earlier, that the majority of cases of bowel cancer can be prevented by a healthy diet and lifestyle. And the source of the protein that you eat in your diet is a really important determinant of your overall health and your cancer risk. Everybody needs to get enough protein in their diet. It is so important. Being protein aware is not the same as being meat aware. And that's an important distinction. Healthy plant-based diets substantially reduce the risk of colon cancer. So if you're eating a healthy plant-based diet, what are the great foods to get your protein from? Beans, legumes, chickpeas, split peas, lentils, great sources of dietary protein. Let's not forget foods like whole grain breads and other whole grains are a really great source of dietary protein. We know from study after study that individuals who eat an exclusively healthy and exclusively plant-based diet get plenty of dietary protein, getting between 80 and 100 grams of protein per day, which is enough for most people. Some of my favorite high-protein foods would include tofu, tempeh, and seitan. These are all delicious plant-based options that are easy to cook with and will work in almost any dietary approach or any culinary style, right? You can work those into any meal. So rather than having the lamb mince in your pot pie, you might go for the lentil mince in your pot pie. Rather than having chicken in your alfresi, you might go for having tofu in your jalfrezi. So they can fit into any dietary pattern. If you're going for the burger, get the bean burger, not the beef burger. You're going to substantially reduce your risk of cancer. There are two protein sources that we do not want to include in our diet if we are worried about bowel cancer, and particularly about any cancer. And those two protein sources are your processed meats, so your bacon, your hot dogs, your lunch meats, your salamis. We have known since 10 years ago that those foods are carcinogenic. Class one carcinogens, according to the World Health Organization. The cancer that those foods are tightly linked to is colon cancer. So bacon in particular, I've often said if I could get rid of one food group, it would be bacon. As a gastroenterologist, I see so many people with bowel cancer that if we could lose bacon, that would be a good move. And the other one is red meat. So your beef and your lamb and your pork, according to the World Health Organization and the International Agency for Research on Cancer, those are class two carcinogens that they probably contribute to the increased risk of bowel cancer that we see in countries where we eat the standard Western diet. And you know, I often think, Rose, if you went to a restaurant, and you know, and I know a lot of restaurants will have the food allergy information on display, which is so important. They will also sometimes have the calorie content of the meal on display, which is also helpful for some people. But I've often wondered if you went into a restaurant or you went for dinner at a friend's house and they served you a meal that had beef, you know, like a big slab of beef in that meal, and they said, "Hey, here is your beef. It probably causes colon cancer. Enjoy." You may not choose to eat that meal. Or if they served you a hot dog and said, "Here's your hot dog. I put on, you know, extra relish. You've got the mustard and the onions on there, and you know it's a class one carcinogen that increases your risk of colon cancer. Enjoy." Probably wouldn't eat it. I think if we were really honest about those foods, we wouldn't eat them. So I hope that answers Amy's question about protein. It's a question, as someone who recommends a plant-dominant diet, someone who eats a plant-exclusive diet myself, where do you get your protein? Is probably the question that I'm asked most of all, but I welcome it every single time because where we choose to get our dietary protein from is a really important determinant of our health and longevity. The more protein that we get from plants, better.
Well, thank you for the email, Amy. And I'm sorry to hear about your grandmother. And we're sending our best wishes to your cousins and really best wishes to everyone who has loved ones affected by cancer, or maybe you are dealing with cancer right now. We just know that the rates are going up. And this is one reason why we're doing so many of these shows, because this information is so important. Monica writes, and I just want to acknowledge her email. "My son eats a lot of red meat because he says he needs the protein. He's an athlete, plays a lot of baseball, basketball, and works out. So he thinks this is what he needs in ramped up proportions. I say we don't need as much, and that red meat is connected to heart disease and colorectal cancer." What are your thoughts on this, Dr. Desmond? Because one of the reasons why you launched your podcast, Eat This, is because there's so much misinformation and misleading information about health out there. There are a lot of doctors who are pushing a carnivore dominant diet on many, many spaces. What are your thoughts about this, given what we know that the research says?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you know, I think in terms of athletic performance, we've had this belief for a long time, haven't we, that who don't eat meat are somehow weaker or less able to thrive, and certainly less able to be successful athletes. And that, I've got to say, is kind of an outdated concept. I mean, if we look, I would recommend that the caller's relative or son was a look at the Game Changers documentary on Netflix, where you'll see so many incredible plant-based athletes who are out there absolutely smashing it every single day. I'm friends with Robert Cheek, an incredible bodybuilder, with Nimai Delgado, an incredible former professional bodybuilder, Cor Washington, an IFBB pro bodybuilder and longtime vegan. We look at ultra marathoners like Scott Jurek and Fiona Oates. We look at my friend Rich Roll, who in his 40s became one of the world's top ultra endurance athletes on an exclusively plant-based diet. The concept that we need to eat red meat to be athletes is, I'm afraid, a little bit outdated and inaccurate. I would encourage this it's difficult, but I think you have to meet people where they are. But I think for a young athletic person, I remember having one patient at my clinic, actually, a man in his 20s who'd been diagnosed with a chronic GI condition. And as with all of my patients, I'd spoken to him on numerous occasions about making the change to a healthier plant-based approach. But he just wasn't ready for it, Rose. You know, he needed to come to it when he was ready to. And one day he came into my clinic and we went through everything and things were going okay. And he was doing better than he had been previously. So I brought the conversation back around to food again. And he said, "Oh, yeah, I saw this documentary on Netflix called The Game Changers, and it's completely changed my approach to food. I'm now eating plant-based, Dr. Desmond." He was telling me this like I'd never heard of it before, but it was fine because he needed to come to it when he was ready. And for him, he was worried about his athleticism. And we were able to recap on that amazing documentary and talk about some of the incredible plant-based athletes that we even see. I mean, if you look at athletes like Venus Williams, Novak Djokovic, I mean, Wimbledon is now basically dominated by people who eat plant-based diets. If we look at Lewis Hamilton, the greatest Formula One racer of all time, who is vegan for ethical reasons, you will see that the concept that one needs to eat red meat to be a successful athlete is outdated. We've got athletes in the NBA like Kyrie Irving, JaVale McGee, quarterbacks like Cam Newton, et cetera. You know, these men and women are out there breaking records as athletes without any red meat. In fact,
Well,
with no meat at all, you know, so it's completely achievable.
I didn't know that Venus Williams was plant-based, but I'm reading now that she began following a raw vegan diet to fight autoimmune disorder.
Yeah,
So
and I now believe it's a
interesting.
broader plant-based diet. She was diagnosed with Sjogren's syndrome and has spoken publicly about how her change in her approach to food had such a positive impact and got her back on the court.
We have so many more questions, Dr. Desmond, that we don't have time for. I just want to ask this because this is really important. Catherine, my partner suffers from extreme gas when he eats fiber-rich foods. He had intestinal surgery to remove polyps. They had to cut out part of the intestine and rejoin it. His problems with digesting fiber just got worse. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, well, first of all, if we have an individual who's had major abdominal surgery and has had to have part of their bowel removed, then that really gets into a specialist area. So that would be my number one tip would be, if possible, if this gentleman could get himself booked in with a registered dietitian and speak with that registered dietitian and agree that their mission is to help him to eat the healthiest possible diet for him. Do you understand? So within the disability that he has from having had part of his bowel removed, it's still possible to make some healthy changes. I would also suggest that when people are embarking on this change, if they start to experience excess gas and bloating and flatulence and all of that, that they may need to slow it right down. And instead of jumping from zero to hero, to just make very gradual changes. Now, we spoke earlier about how one can build up to eating 9 servings of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains every day. Very often a clinic, because of the way that people eat to no fault of their own, the very first move towards moving someone towards healthier dietary patterns might be simply agreeing that they will eat one apple a day, or one orange a day, or one piece of fruit, or one serving of whole grains each day. So taking it very, very gradually and building up even over a period of weeks or months, but staying on the mission can really, really get you there and allow your digestive system and your gut microbiome time to adjust to your new, healthier way of eating. But certainly for someone who's had intestinal surgery or has had specialist intervention like that, enlisting the support of a really good registered dietitian can be an absolute game changer.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for the question, Catherine. I'm so sorry to our callers. We just didn't have time. Just one quick one, Dr. Desmond. We're almost out of time. A few people want to know about fasting.
Yeah, in terms of digestive health, I got to say, fasting is almost a kind of a niche question, because at my general GI clinic, what I really want people to do is I don't want them to eat less food. I want them to eat more of the healthy stuff. Okay. So if you are eating a standard American diet whereby you are getting maybe 50 to 60% of your calories from ultra processed foods, if you're eating over 100 kilos of meat per year, where dairy, milk, saturated fat, and all of those foods are making up the majority of your calories. And if you are looking to make a healthy change to help promote gradual healthy weight loss, a healthier gut, and a healthier body, and a healthier mind, then I would much rather that you continued to eat 3 regular meals per day, but that you would gradually change how those meals are built, like we've been discussing for the last 45 minutes or so. But that's the key. In terms of building in periods of fasting into your day, there may be some benefits for some people in helping to promote gradual healthy weight loss.
And Dr. Desmond, we'll have to, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're running against the clock. We'll have to continue this conversation.
Of course.
I hope you can come
part
back.
Part two.
Yes, because there's so many people have questions for you. Dr. Alan Desmond is a gut health specialist. Find more information about his work at kalw.org. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.